Okay, welcome back to the show. It's with the greatest of all possible pleasures that I introduce my first guest today. Please be upstanding for Mr. Jerome Flynn. Hello, Jerome.
Hi, Bob. Nice to be with you today.
Lovely to have you with me, and it really is. Now, here's the thing. They said, oh, Jerome Flynn's doing the show, and I thought, that's fantastic. And I thought, there's so much I could talk to Jerome Flynn about. I could talk to him about his acting career. I could talk about that. I could talk to him about his father, in actual fact, who I worked with once. I could do all that. But in fact, what we're going to be talking about is this harrowing documentary that you've been providing the voice for. So should we do that first?
Yeah, let's do that, Bob.
Yeah, let's do that. Not saying get it out of the way because it is a very harrowing thing, but it is. It's called Hogwood, and it's. I mean, I haven't seen it yet, but I'm just reading the thing about it. Tell us. So you've done the voiceover, and so presumably you've sat through and watched it. Yeah, tell us. Tell us what it's about.
I'm presenter and narrator. On it, it's covering initially some undercover exposure work from a very courageous group of people who work for Viva, which is Vegetarian International Voice for the Animals, who went to a farm called Hogwood and filmed what was the very distressing scenes of the lives that the pigs were being forced to live on this intensive farm. And it tells their journey and how they had to fight for 2 or 3 years until the tens of thousands of people and many, many local campaigns to convince Tesco that their label, which they worked with the Farmers Union to and its government-backed label called Red Tractor, which is supposed to ensure the public and the people who are buying their food that the meat comes from a place where the animals are treated well and there are high welfare standards. And it's the most upsetting film I've ever seen, and I've seen a few and been part of some horrific stuff. But this, and I implore people to try and watch it because it's important that we face the truth. And so it's not just about the treatment of the animals and what something like 83% of the animals that we consume are intensively farmed in this country. And we're still fed this kind of idyll of an idea of the sort of lives that the animals we consume live. And yet the vast majority are living in incarceration and horror. And this particular one, the really, really worrying bit for me is that the government now know about it and still have done nothing about Red Tractor. Still, they're allowed to inspect only a year. They can get the vets in they want. And if they don't like what the vets say, they get another vet. And this is all exposed in the film. So we're trying to spread awareness of this because the time has come where this really has got to stop. I mean, so many areas of our culture and our life, the injustice of how we treat each other and nature and all living beings is being exposed in the name, we're living in a time where our government are led by corporations and they're led by a certain type of progress which doesn't care for life. And animal agriculture is one of the biggest culprits.
You see, so I like to think of myself as someone who, is quite a caring person. And this is one of the really disturbing things about this that's come out of this documentary and that I have heard, people have spoken about before. And that is this. What you do as a consumer, of course, is what you should do is, not eat meat and have this lifestyle. But if you're a consumer, what you do is, I'm going to make sure, and if I ever get the chance to talk about it to an MP or anything, I'm going to make sure that the government is holding these places to account. And once they tell you that they are, you sort of breathe a sigh of relief and you say, I am eating this. No, but we only buy this one, you see.
Yeah.
We only buy the free. And, of course, anyone who's lived in the world for any length of time has developed a healthy cynicism. And you think, yeah, I'm not... See, if I see free range on a box of eggs, I don't presume for one second that it means every morning farmer comes along and opens the gates and says, come on out, you lot, off you go. Get into that orchard and scrabble around, you know, and at the end of the night with the bowl of feed leads them back into the... But of course, when you see these things, like the red tractor sign, they do make you... They do give you this false sense of security, really. Well, they give you a sense of security, and when you find out that it's false... You see, what I would like to have heard is that we exposed this Hogwood, and we filmed these things, and we went to Tesco's, and they said, or we went to any of the major supermarkets, I'm not picking anyone out, and they said, well, thanks so much for bringing this to our attention. Yeah. Right, get that lot off the shelves. But that's not what happens, is it?
Well, they had to be forced, literally embarrassed out of, because the amount of people that were protesting that knew about these conditions became so much. So sadly, it's being left up to us, because as we are increasingly learning, our government does not have our best interests at heart or that of our natural world. I mean, that's, and our fellow living beings. And I believe it's a natural law that it's a birthright for all living creatures to be able to experience the natural joy of being alive. If we can't give them that, then we're crossing we crossed it a long time ago. But there's a waking up happening, I believe, in so many areas, and saying, hang on, we're being lied to here. There's a big, big con, and what's ruling the decisions that are being made are all about profit and a certain type of progress. And we're not connected to our nature and to our natural selves.
Well, let's take a step back. Here's the thing. Let's move from your position to my position. Which I have to say takes about 5 or 6 steps back, because I know you're a committed, you've been long committed to this and have dedicated your life to a large extent to this. My thing is, all right, I know that it costs a lot of money to make food. I know that. And I know that sometimes compromises have to be made, and I understand that. However, I want to believe that because there are enough people who are talking about it, any government, just out of common sense, would think, we're not gonna make a wonderful idyll of nature, but let's do whatever we can to keep it just this side of decent. And of course, what you run into there is the great myth that people have, which is that governments are actually in charge of the way things are done. And that's when it gets scary, isn't it? When you cross that line and think, you know what? Any government, whoever they are, however well-intentioned they are, there are absolutely strict limits to what they can actually achieve.
Well, it seems. So that's not such a big gap between where I'm at and you're at. It seems like we're on exactly the same territory yet, Bob. But I think it takes... Within the system we have, I think it takes very courageous individuals to stand up for the health, for the good of the whole, because you're right. But those changes can... But it's very hard for not to be corrupted by the system. But I do believe people can go in there. I mean, ultimately, I think the way our politics works and our systems are formed starting from the wrong place, and they have to be taken apart and start again. But whilst we're here, I believe those choices can be made. But there's too much, most of them are too, you know, it's like Boris. I'm sorry, but he keeps making promises that he can't keep. He's just made one, you know, he made one about, not importing this poor welfare chlorinated chicken. He's from America. And he's completely gone back on that. And what does that do to our farmers? That forces them into a position to have to compete with this cheaper, much lower quality meat. It's just asking for trouble. Why are we even importing any food from any other countries? Given the situation that we're in, which is basically sitting on the precipice of ecocidal disaster, and I don't think there's any dispute about that. And that's the other side of things. It's like, well, hang on, this is much more critical than any war we've been in terms of where we're standing now as a race. And yet we took these drastic, you know, we took these drastic steps when we were, during the war to limit what we ate, you know, how much meat we ate. We cannot eat. I'm not the sort of vegan who says we all have to stop, you know, but the truth is we cannot consume the amount of animal protein that we are and survive on this planet. That's just kind of accepted, and it's not being addressed. You know, I heard a politician say on Question Time a few months ago, when he was asked about this, about the UN scientific report saying we have to eat less meat, he said, well, I'm quite happy with what I eat. And that, I'm afraid, coming from somebody who we're supposed to be looking up to, is not really the response you want to hear, because it's like this sense of entitlement that we have bred into us in this culture, that we should be able to have what we want when we want. And that's what's destroying our planet, I'm afraid.
Okay, now, here's the thing.
What a cheery Saturday afternoon conversation.
Well, no, it is, but no, listen, it doesn't all have to be. Sometimes, you know, you can look at these serious things. But here's the thing, right, and this is why it's absolutely relevant now. There's a lot of people sitting at home. What was on Millsy's show? Ah, that bloke off Game of Thrones banging on about eating too much meat. Yeah, of course.
Yeah.
You know, he's a multi-millionaire. He can eat what he wants. He can eat the best stuff. We can't afford. And all that kind of stuff. However, what makes it slightly different at the moment is COVID-19.
Yeah.
Because COVID-19, the more you read about it, the more you begin to realize that there is a definite and irrefutable link between that disease specifically, and diseases of that type,
yeah,
and the way that animals' husbandry has changed.
Absolutely.
The things of, you know, the meat. It's not just a question of, oh, if you all eat meat, then, you know, we'll have to have more cows, and that'll mean less wheat and all that sort of thing. But the consumption of an exploitation of animals, people are making an incredibly strong case now. The fact that, yeah, I read that staggered me. You see, antibiotics, I know people who don't like all this kind of intrusive medicine, antibiotics, we never need it. I think antibiotics are one of the greatest inventions in humankind. It's fantastic that you don't have to die when you get a cold. It's fantastic that children don't have to die from these things because we have antibiotics. The figures that I read, and you'll correct me if I'm wrong, are something like, I think it's 83% of antibiotics that are used in the world, or 75% of antibiotics used across the world, are used for preventative animal agriculture, not to treat human diseases.
Yeah.
That's
true.
Suddenly scary.
It's absolutely true, because they have to be, otherwise. I mean, the conditions they're crammed up in, the lives they're living, it's like literally they're pumping them full of them to keep them from these diseases. And what that's doing to the overall kind of microbiome of our guts and the planet and the fertilizers being used, it's a pretty insane kind of system we have. But you're absolutely right. Those majority of viruses that have come over the years, over the millennia, very, very often it's to do with our abuse and our kind of stepping over the edge in terms of the natural balance of things. And when we're taking away the amount of land and natural habitats that is being taken away from the wild to feed animals to make their protein, it's a kind of insane amount of land. It's about five times more you need to produce a pound of meat protein than plant protein. So we're going over into the wild and mixing with animals that just we shouldn't be mixing with, and now killing and eating them as well. And It's true. That's where most of our viruses is coming from.
So basically it's this. If it's 300 years ago and I've got a wife and a kid and we've got a cow and a couple of sheep, then, you know, we've done, and then we slaughter one of the sheep, we slaughter one of the pigs, and we salt it and we do it, and that keeps us going for 3 or 4 months. And that's the way it works. But if you get...
And you would probably, I would imagine 300 years ago, you would have cared for your animals and made sure you loved them and killed them well with respect.
Right, exactly. But now what's happened, if you've got 100,000 of those pigs in the thing, to stop them getting ill, to stop them contracting diseases, you have to pump them so full of antibiotics and all sorts of treatments all the time that by the time you do kill them, that meat is now completely different.
Absolutely.
It's a completely different thing, and the more we eat that meat, then that of, I mean, human body's a fantastic thing. You can put all sorts of rubbish into it, and it will sort out. No, we don't want that. But lots of it will seep in, and just because your body now thinks, all right, well, that disease of pigs, there's too much of that now. We can't just excrete it all. Let's adjust our systems so that we can deal with it. And the more you do that, the more chance there is that every now and again, one of these things is going to slip in and your body thinks, no, we can't cope with that. We don't know how to deal with that.
Yeah, and it's been, from scientists, it's been widely accepted now that, you know, that also the viruses that are around, and with the coronavirus, that it's our already very compromised immune systems that are making us way more, and the death count way, way higher because of the state our bodies are in already, which is very, very much largely to do with the food we eat and the state of our water and our soil. And it's all related. So, you know, nature has dealt us this hand. I believe it's quite a gentle warning. And it is a time for us to stop. Because we're just about to try and go back, and pray God we don't just go back to how it was, because that's, you know, it's just like pointing the ship back at the same iceberg and setting sail again without really learning our lesson. And there are many lessons to be learned.
Has anything that you've seen given you any hope?
There's so
a whole
much...
new wave, isn't there, of veganism and stuff like that.
Yeah, this is, because don't get me wrong, I'm not here saying we've all got to become vegan. There's a lot more to it than that. We definitely have to eat less meat and really, really take care about where that comes from. But there's so much good stuff going on around the world. There's many, many collaboratives now of wonderful organizations who are and working locally together. And look at what's happened here. So many more people are suddenly growing their own food now, which has to happen. We've got to come back to localities. There's a huge amount of positivity around, and we don't get to hear about that. And the power of the human heart when we do come together and kind of drop our personal agendas. And there's a joyful purpose to be had here, which is basically saving, you know, making sure that our grandchildren's planet is a beautiful, thriving one. So there are many, many more people committed to that now, I believe, than there were 6 months ago. So I think we must take heart and find that time to connect with the joy, with nature and the natural joy of being alive, because otherwise it seems like too big a mountain to climb. But our culture and our media really pump us full of, you know, full of the bad news and full of fear, and it's kind of easy to understand why so many people, young people, have got mental health issues and the suicide rate is so high, because of what you see, you know, what we're being told about culture. So you know, I believe that we've become so disconnected and desensitized to these beautiful creatures. You know, pigs, which is what this farm, Hogwood Farm, is had pigs. It's been closed down now, thank God. But there are many other farms like it. But pigs, they say, have got the emotional sensitivity and intelligence of a four-year-old. So let's think about that. Not that I would put one animal above another, but it's just they never see the light of day or feel earth under their feet, you know. They're eating each other, each alive in there. This is footage of that. And so it's like we do need to face the truth in order to be able to make the changes. And in a way, have our hearts broken, you know, because we're frightened of feeling everything there is to feel. But if we don't kind of break our heart open and feel it, then we'll stay ignoring it all.
So it's How Good, a Modern Horror Story. It's streaming on Amazon Prime, Apple TV and Google Play Movies. Indie documentary following the Intrepid Group. So get on there, watch it, and just watch it and think about it. The hands of the clock are tugging at my point. Go on.
Just to say, there is a petition to Boris Johnson to end factory farming. You can find that on viva.org.
Right. Okay. You're coming back on the show, and we're going to talk about Game of Thrones. We're going to talk about Soldier. We're going to talk about your dad. We're going to talk all things, all right? But for now, thank you so much for enlightening us about the documentary Hogwood, Jerome Flynn. This is Bob Mills on Talk Radio.